This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, August the 28th, 2015. Hello and a very warm welcome to you for this week's edition of the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. The extracts we'll be reading for you from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Gordon and Liz Legg. Before we begin, a couple of regular notices for you. If you have any problems with your recording, do please call Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. And just a reminder here that you can use buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes or back to any of the tracks you want to listen to again. If you know of anyone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, Irene will help you with that also. Just give her a call and she'll make the necessary arrangements for you. Her number again, 01962 870 370. And just another reminder for those of you with computers or tablets, as well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, winchestertalkingnews.com. And that would be www.winchestertalkingnews.com, all lowercase. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, most recent first on the list. And so on to this week's edition of the Chronicle. Your readers this week are Claire Porter.
Hello.
Robin Freeman.
Hello.
Jerry Tuff.
Hello.
And I'm Ros Lydiard, your presenter. Now, the main headlines this week are Diagnosis Led to Corrie's Tragic Death, Chiefs Quizzed on Energy Plan, and Celebrations Greet Fine GCSE Results. And, Jerry, could you start us off with the first headline story, please?
Diagnosis Led to Corrie's Tragic Death. The family of a fitness instructor who took her own life say medics signed her death warrant when they told her that she had a personality disorder, an inquest heard. Yoga teacher Corrie Whivell, 39, who grew up in Winchester and attended Barton Peveril College, was found hanged on play equipment near Bodmin Road in Bishopstoke in May, having been given the diagnosis, which left her devastated just months earlier. Now a coroner has ruled that mental health experts at Oxford Health NHS Foundation Trust failed to think of her, and he said he would be writing to them with his concerns. The Trust has also launched a review, but it refused to make further comment about the case. The inquest in Winchester last Wednesday heard how Miss Whivell was told she had a borderline personality disorder, BPD, months before her death. Her brother, Julian Cooper, said that more should have been done by health services and said the diagnosis and car crash she was involved in were trigger points. Before her death, she was living in Oxfordshire with her partner, but returned to Hampshire to stay with a friend after the relationship broke down. She had been forced to give up her fitness work due to the injuries sustained in the crash, the hearing was told. Mr. Cooper told the hearing, "I believe the conversation when she was told she had BPD, signed her death warrant. I think the thing that came out from it was she was told it would take 2 years to sort her life out. That, with her condition, just sending her emails or text messages are missed opportunities, I think someone should have phoned her up. I feel with her past history that the system has let her down." The inquest heard that Miss Whivell had a history of depression. Her death on May the 22nd prompted a huge response, with people flooding social media to pay respects to Miss Whivell, who used to run CW Fitness. She also worked as a life coach and counsellor. The inquest heard a report from GP Dr. John Uden, explaining she had a history of depression, a difficult childhood, and self-harming, and how she used her fitness exercise to manage her mood. However, she had to give up her career when she suffered injuries and a car crash 2 years ago. The inquest also heard a report from psychiatric nurse Gail Elliott, who said Miss Whittle had suffered from mood swings and alcohol abuse. Following the diagnosis of BPD, Miss Whittle was given website details about the condition and told to attend appointments, but failed to do so, Miss Elliott said. Recording a verdict of suicide, Central Hampshire coroner Graham Short said there were lessons to be learnt. Mr. Short said, "It is clear Corrine hanged herself. It was a deliberate act, and she knew what she was doing. It is my intention to write to mental health services in Oxfordshire about the fact that no one had thought through the future for Corrie after she was given that bombshell information about BPD before she died." A statement from the Oxfordshire Trust said, "The Trust is currently reviewing the circumstances around this case and is not in a position to comment on matters further at this time." It added, "However, we will respond to any questions the coroner should raise with us."
And Robin, please.
Chiefs quizzed on energy plan. College chiefs are facing questions over how they will supply a green energy plant planned for a village near Winchester. Fears have been raised that thousands of lorries will have to navigate narrow roads to supply an anaerobic digester at Sparsholt College near Winchester. The facility, turning grass and maize into biogas, is set to provide enough clean energy to power thousands of homes. Douglas Patterson, a farmer and chairman of Keep Hampshire Green, estimated the plant would consume 60 to 90,000 tonnes of grass silage per year, requiring up to 9,000 trucks to deliver. You just need to imagine what that's going to be like for the community that lives around here, he said. At least 75% of that will be coming out again, one way or another. You don't get 90,000 tonnes of silage from a small catchment area. They're going to be travelling miles and miles with that. Where it's coming from, what are their routes of entry? The plant, branded the Green Gas Mill, will produce energy for the college and the national grid. Sparsholt College, which announced more details of the plant last week, said grass will be grown locally. Questioning claims that digestion benefits the soil, Mr. Patterson added, "It's not an environmentally friendly route to energy production. It's the wrong feedstock, the wrong location, the wrong size." But local county councillor Jackie Porter defended the scheme. The Lib Dem, who ran for Parliament in the general election, said, "Sparsholt's efforts to lead the way in green energy technology should be applauded and encouraged." Dale Vince's Ecotricity, the plant's developer, is a company dedicated to a greener future for our young people, and we owe it to them to take a risk now and then. But this isn't a risk. Green gas is just one of the ways we can provide continuous energy supply. We can't say we want a greener future and then ignore the opportunities. The college is holding a series of information sessions in the coming weeks, details to be announced. Sparsholt Parish Council is advertising the consultation and gathering opinion before. Councillors have previously raised concerns over traffic and the college's communication with residents over plans to install a wind turbine. Sue Wood, chairman, said, "They were highly criticised for the wind turbine because they didn't have any communication with us at all. This time, the communication is critical, but Tim Jackson, principal, is talking to us."
And you and your item, please, Claire.
Celebrations greet fine GCSE results. The sound of celebration was in the air in Winchester as students picked up their GCSE results. Staff and pupils at Perrins and Henry Beaufort schools were smiling from ear to ear as both schools managed to boost the number of pupils achieving 5 A star to C grades, including maths and English, by 10% or more. Henry Beaufort saw 71% of pupils achieving this, up 59%. Head teacher Sue Hurl said the figure was helped by a change in the learning ethos. She said, "I am delighted for our students who have demonstrated commitment and resilience in the face of the tough challenges that accompany GCSE studies. The dedication of the staff to each and every one of their students has been a key factor in our many successes." One student, who perhaps epitomised the resiliency as part of the learning ethos, was Ben Simpson, who's 16, from Stanmore, who managed to achieve 3 A stars, 5 A's and a B, despite having dyslexia that prevented teachers from reading his work when he first joined the school. The school helped work around his dyslexia by providing him with extra time and let him use a laptop in exams and lessons. At Perrins in Alresford, 75% of students achieved 5 A stars to C grades, including maths and English, which is 10% up. Retiring head Janice Bernard said, "The results reflect students' hard work and the fact that Perrins continues to provide an educational experience which is rich and challenging." Results were also up at Westgate School, as 82% of students achieved 5 A stars to C grades, including maths and English, 8% up on 2014. Head teacher Paul Nicholson said, "These outstanding results are testament to the dedication, hard work, perseverance and commitment of all our pupils." At King's, results were down slightly on last year, as 76% achieved 5 A's to C grades, including maths and English. Head teacher Matthew Leeming said, "Our young people have worked hard and, with help from their teachers and parents, achieved great results."
Thank you very much, Claire and everyone. We have the death notices for you now, and I will start with reading Douglas. Peter Gray Douglas passed away on the 16th of August.
Finch, Betty Eileen Finch, aged 93 years, passed away peacefully on 17th August.
Goulding, Kenneth Leonard Goulding, in Flowerdown Care Home, aged 75 years.
Marchant, Betty Marchant, on 23rd of August, aged 88 years.
Mariner, Arthur George Mariner, peacefully, on 10th of August, aged 99.
McGartland, Adrian Colin McGartland, sadly passed away on 14th August, aged 55 years.
Molyneux, Frieda Noreen Molyneux, peacefully, on the 14th of August, aged 86 years.
Molam, Vera Molam, peacefully on 18th of August, aged 83 years.
Nichols, Anne Annette Nichols, died peacefully on the 23rd of August.
Tustin, Sybil Dibbs Tustin, peacefully on 21st August, aged 91.
And Claire has Christian comment for us now. I think it's Rosemary Baker again this week, isn't it?
That's right. She's headed this time, "What Price a Good Hymn?" Recently on Facebook, a friend shared a post which showed a church auction where people could bid to ban a certain hymn from their worship for a year. This proved quite popular, but also engendered a discussion not just about which hymn they would ban, but other suggestions were also made. These included ideas such as sponsor your favourite hymn, or indeed all the hymns and music for a service. Sadly, the only time people get their favourite hymns and music is at their funerals, when they are not there to enjoy them. So perhaps this is one way this could be changed. Hymns are thought of as Christian, but in fact can be in any religion. The word is derived from the Greek and means a song of praise, usually to a deity. The earliest seems to have been in ancient Egypt, so there is a long tradition. There is currently something of a divide amongst Christians between those who favour older traditional hymns and those who prefer newer hymns with modern tunes, believing that this is the way to attract young people to church. Not much research has been done on this, but a survey of the nation's most popular hymns a few years ago showed only two very recent hymns in the top 10, that is, In Christ Alone and I, the Lord of Sea and Sky, both with more traditional types of tune, two of middling vintage, and the rest including the top ranking How Great Thou Art of very traditional type. When I trained as a local preacher in the Methodist Church, I was taught that choosing the hymns was an integral part of worship, and often spent as long on them as I did writing the sermon. They had to be appropriate for the different parts of the service: adoration and praise, confession, the word, and our response to it, and then the wider world as we were being sent out into. There should be a mix of old and new, and have at least one hymn by Charles Wesley or Isaac Watts, if being marked by assessors. Obviously, the seasons should be adhered to, and they should be connected to the theme, or at least appropriate for it. Later, as a minister, I tried to find out my congregation's favourites, so they didn't always have to be mine. Hymns have many meanings for people: those connected with memories or loved ones, those with comforting words, and then there are those that challenge the church of today to make us think. Perhaps this is something we should do more of. Those who choose the music and hymns for worship have a duty and responsibility to choose carefully. And that was written by Rosemary A. Baker.
Thank you, Claire, very much. And now we move on to letters to the editor. We have 9 this week. And Robin, can you start it off with the first letter, please?
The heading is Silver Struggle. The latest round in the Battle of Silver Hill is becoming as protracted as the Greece-EU conflict. Winchester City Council may have decided to push on with the original scheme with the same developer, but more legal action is threatened, and the Secretary of State may yet decide to get involved. In addition, Claire Lloyd-Jones will be issuing her independent report later in the year into the way the City Council obtain, assess and interpret advice in these matters. Although the Council had apparently promised not to make any major decisions until then, they have done just that. This decision to go ahead was also based on advice. I hope it is more reliable than that which reassured the Council in December 2014 that it was reasonable to allow the Planning Committee to consider and approve the amended scheme, presumably on the basis that the High Court judicial review was unlikely to succeed. The real question, now the viability of the unviable 2009 scheme has been miraculously restored, is that we can rely on TH Real Estate, Henderson, to deliver the social elements, bus station, on-site affordable housing. I fear that the government's stated aim of freeing up the planning process and at the same time undermining the status of housing associations by extending the right to buy will afford Henderson many more opportunities to run rings round the council. Karen Barrett, Byron Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester.
Thank you, Robin. That story is going to run and run, isn't it? Jerry, you've got the next letter, please.
Which isn't about Silver Hill, and it comes from R. Summers Cox and is headed Costly Cathedral. Recently, with friends at Worcester, we visited Worcester Cathedral, which I am pleased to report remains free and open unlike Winchester and Salisbury, which impose an entry charge. One must assume that the maintenance and repair bills at Worcester are unlikely to be much removed from Winchester and must be covered by the donation boxes receipt. I'm pagan, so I'm hardly concerned about eternal damnation. But surely these cathedrals purport to be the house of God. If anywhere should be open and free, it should be here. Isn't there some biblical quote about money changers in the temple? Now we have money collectors manning the sheep pen-style payment desks. I'm told that the charge at Canterbury is £17 per person, £34 for a couple. Obscene. Perhaps I could kick off a debate. If Worcester can be free, then why not Winchester, R. Summers Cox, Goodworth Clapford, Andover?
This letter from Richard Stobart is headed Housing Spin. In your editorial on July 30th, you referred to the chronic need for more housing versus the impact on the existing community. Regrettably, you have fallen for the spin. There is a limitless desire for more housing, but not a need. Almost everyone who lives here has a roof under which they can sleep. We live on a completely finite planet, and the county of Hampshire, which has been one of its finer parts, is finite too. For every house that is built here, there are five or six families wishing to move into the county. The people who live here, the community, do not benefit, but are cursed with an inadequate infrastructure from water supplies and schools to railways and roads, whilst the land and all the other living creatures to which the county is home are trashed. Please contemplate the difference between the Great Butterfly and Wildlife Reserve on Magdalen Hill Down, the legacy of George York, whose wife wrote to you last week, and the legacy of Winchester City Council and local development companies. The answer would be simple, save that irresponsibility and greed will win, and in less than 20 years, the City Council will approve estates being built across Magdalen Hill Down and St Catherine's Hill on the direction of someone in London. Never mind the butterflies, lovely views. Somehow, it has to be possible to say, stop. Richard Stobart, Bournefields, Twyford.
This is from Squadron Leader Tony G. Pickering and has the title Remember Sacrifices with a Lunch. I had the honour of flying Hurricanes as one of Churchill's few during the Battle of Britain 75 years ago this summer. As we recall those fateful days and celebrate the bravery of those involved, many of them my friends and colleagues, we must remember our enduring debt of gratitude to all who have served and who serve now. The RAF Benevolent Fund believes it is important for the country to share in the memory of the Battle of Britain and the sacrifices that were made. But it needn't all be a solemn affair. That's why I'm supporting their inaugural Great British Sunday Lunch, a chance for families, friends and communities to gather together on Sunday, September the 13th, to host their own meal at home, in the local community centre, at the pub or in the park, to raise vital funds to support RAF veterans and their families. Squadron Leader Tony G. Pickering, care of 67 Portland Place, London.
This letter is headed Wrong Council, and it comes from Councillor Victoria Weston. I refer to the letter from Eric Horne in the Chronicle on August the 13th regarding the flood wall at Water Lane. We're grateful for the kind comments about the quality and workmanship of the wall, but would like to point out that the design and procurement was in fact undertaken by Winchester City Council, in conjunction with the Environment Agency. The Council is well aware of its responsibilities in relation to both flooding and urban design issues. I can assure Mr. Horne that the Council would not consider the use of inappropriate materials, such as concrete blocks. Councillor Victoria Weston, Deputy Leader, Winchester City Council.
This letter from Kate McIntosh is headed Against TTIP. Sir, on the High Street on Saturday, a small group of dedicated enthusiasts gathered 210 signatures in less than 2 hours against the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Treaty, TTIP, currently making its way through the European Parliament. The aspect of this treaty which most alarmed the citizens and visitors is the offshore, unaccountable court to which it is proposed multinational corporations could appeal against the national laws and standards which they deem to be damaging their maximisation of profit, the so-called Investor State Dispute Settlement, ISDS. Under similar trade agreements to the TTIP proposal, such as the North Atlantic Free Trade Agreement, investors have won against the host country in 31% of cases brought, and large fines have been imposed. Notably, only foreign investors can sue states under investment treaties, and only states can be held liable to pay damages for breach of the treaty. States have no corresponding right to bring an original claim against a foreign investor. Many people said such things as, "I'm not in favour of big business dictating. They have too much power already." This action was organised by 38 Degrees, which is not aligned to any political party. Kate McIntosh, West End Terrace, Winchester.
And the next letter, headed Concern on Deal, comes from Terry Cartwright and is about the same subject as the previous letter. On Saturday, August the 22nd, thousands of volunteers across the country took to the streets to raise awareness of a secretive deal with the USA that will give more power to big corporations. The campaign was coordinated by the independent campaign group 38 Degrees to alert people to the dangers of this deal, which gets almost no publicity, although some newspapers have heroically tried to bring it to public attention. The key risks are, 1, it could allow big businesses to sue the government if British laws dent their profits. 2, it could threaten the future of our public services, for example, forcing NHS trusts across the country to open up to American private healthcare providers. 3, it could relax laws to force Europe to accept USA meat, such as beef with growth hormones and chicken washed in chlorine, along with toxic substances and pesticides currently banned by the EU and, of course, produced by USA companies. Other European Union countries are pushing this through quietly too, and their citizens are also protesting. Over 2.5 million people have signed petitions against the deal being hatched behind closed doors. EU bureaucrats are so concerned at this widespread opposition that a new rule has been introduced stating that politicians can only view the text in a secure reading room in Brussels. Most UK politicians are clandestinely backing the deal, but failing to release the details to the public. Voters need to be made aware of this so-called beneficial deal. To find out more and show support for this campaign, visit 38degrees.org.uk/TTIP. Terry Cartwright, Fountain Road, Selborne.
This is a letter from Malcolm Millard of Flexford, with the title Nimby's Beaten. It was great news to read at last that after 2 years wasted time by the Nimby's, Test Valley Council has given the go-ahead for the big new solar farms to allow Hampshire output to at last catch up with the rest of the UK. What your readers do not know is the facts and that power output in the UK has been going down very fast. I know that we have had a very fast network of gas stations to put up, but they are very dear to run as the gas fuel has to come from the east at high cost in transport. Also, many years ago, the power stations only had four big units, so if you had to shut down a big unit, the loss was very high, 25% for just one unit. The case for the loss of a power plant is such that there is a master plan to ask for all big users in daytime and at night to stop using power just to keep the lights on in homes. Also, the ground is still used for sheep and pigs, so it is a win-win way to keep the lights on, and all the power firms have to do is put a 10-foot-high hedge on the roadside and you will not see the farms. Much better than windmills killing all the birds. Malcolm Millard, Flexford.
This letter is headed Thanks to NHS and is written by Vivian Barnes. Sir, the NHS often gets a bad press. Recently, my 87-year-old mother spent nearly a month between the Royal Hampshire County and Basingstoke hospitals. She received the best possible treatment, was treated with respect and dignity. All the staff were compassionate, often in very difficult circumstances. Many thanks to all of them. These are the people who should be recognised in the New Year's honours, not singers, celebrities, sports personalities, or people who have been successful in business on the back of who they know. Vivian Barnes, Compton Way, Winchester.
Thank you all for reading those. You might have an opinion or a subject that you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle. And if you do, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. 01962 860 836. Or you can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. That's all lowercase, no spaces. news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you can also write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. SO23 8AL. And now we're going to stay with opinions of the public, please, Jerry, because you have the Your Say column this week.
I do. And people this week were asked, should hackers have made public information on millions of users of adultery website Ashley Madison? Stephen Dibley, 46, unemployed of St Catherine's Hill, said, I think it's up to the individual to tell their partner about having an affair, and it should be between partners. I do not think their details should be made so public. Michael Meredith, 25, forklift driver of St Mary's Street, Stanmore, said, I do not think they should be outed. Everyone has a right to privacy. Danny Wilkinson, 19, manager of the Winchester Fancy Dress Shop from Bedhampton, said, well, I think they should be outed, but perhaps the details should not be public and it should be more private. But it's their fault for being on that website. And Abby White, 26, owner of Flat White's Mobile Catering of High Street, Winchester, said, your business is your business. I do not think it was any of the hackers' business. I think they should get a life.
Thank you, Jerry. We've got editorial comment, and it's headed, College's gas mill is raising big questions. Major plans for a green gas mill, also known as an anaerobic digester, have been unveiled for Sparsholt College. It will be a plant that turns grass and maize into biogas and provides cleaner energy. But it will inevitably impact on the nearby village with a large number of lorries delivering to the facility. The battle lines are being drawn up between supporters and opponents who say it is the wrong size in the wrong location and is actually environmentally unfriendly. The question remains, how to combat climate change unless we move away from the current polluting methods? As one supporter said, We can't say we want a greener future and then ignore the opportunities. And Robin has first person this week, and the contributor is Khalid Aziz.
And the title is Camels and Hampshire Hogs. France, a country full of culture and history, or economic basket case that could find itself falling foul of the Euro debacle if and when Greece, rapidly followed by Italy and Spain, exits the single currency stage left. Visiting northern Brittany, as I have done for the last 27 years, I've been struck by the resilience of the people, but there's no doubt that they've been through the ringer. Brittany is essentially the French version of Wales. It's Celtic in culture, and certainly there are signs, reminiscent of Meby and Curnow, the Cornish share the Breton heritage, in the 1960s, that Breton nationalism is bubbling just under the surface. 5 hours from Paris, the graffiti indicates strength of feeling. Entering Paimpol, one is greeted with a delight of the spray painter's art, loosely translated as "We are Bretons, F asterisk 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 France." Monsieur Hollande must be thrilled. Paimpol is twinned with Romsey and has been so for some years. Not quite sure why. The Romsey Town Twinning website shows a Hampshire bobby resplendent in silver helmet communing with his Paimpol counterpart, whose hat is simply another version of a naval officer's cap. As far as I know, Romsey has no bubbling movement of secessionists waiting to declare UDI. The townsfolk seem happy with their position as part of Hampshire, England, and one presumes the UK, loyal to a man and woman. Paimpol is a seaport with much history, including intrepid fishermen setting sail and travelling hundreds of miles to the frozen fishing grounds off Iceland, teeming with cod. It was a treacherous endeavour, at the whim of nature, with months away from home. Storms unpredictable and unpredicted, with no Met Office, had to be ridden out. The local museum is full of photos from the 19th and 20th centuries, detailing privations and sometimes death faced by the fisherfolk. With no refrigeration, the catch was salted down for its journey back to northern France. Even today, the supermarkets sell salt cod to the dwindling number of traditionalists who want to recreate the fish dishes of yore. Romsey's maritime experience seems tame by comparison. Granted, there was a time when commercial traffic navigated up the Test to Romsey, but unless someone wants to correct me, I am not sure that there is an equivalent fishing tradition on the same scale. It would be hard to imagine Romsey mounting a festival on a par with the Fête des Chants des Marins, or Festival of Sea Shanties. This was the first time we had managed to attend this biennial three-day event, despite having visited annually for nearly three decades. It was wonderful. The locked port in Paimpol, there is access in and out just 2 hours either side of the high tide, was crammed with ancient luggers and gaffs, plus some pretty hefty tall ships. The port is sealed off for the 3 days, and access is akin to a rock festival, complete with significant entry fees, wristbands and pass-out stamps. But it's worth it. There are wandering musicians and more formal stages, six in all. The quality ranges from a couple of old ducks with a concertina, whose costumes were frankly better than their singing, to highly professional groups such as the Celtic Social Club, which would have given some Glastonbury bands a run for their money. A high spot was the bizarre, twice life-sized mechanical camel. Somewhat moth-eaten, this behemoth required a dozen attendees to trundle it round the cobbles and work its mechanics, creating a strangely lifelike impression, a kind of Arabian warhorse. The atmosphere was enhanced by the food offerings, including local oysters and our favourite Jarret du Poc, ham hock. It seems that the French remain vibrant and can still put on a great event. I want to see that camel at the next Romsey show. Perhaps it could be twinned with a huge Hampshire hog.
Thank you. Bulgarum, with their alternative look at the news, has given us three items this week. Jerry's going to begin with the first one, please.
Archaeologist returns to lead guided tour. One of the world's most eminent archaeologists led a guided tour around the city where he made his name. Professor Martin Biddle led important digs from the 1950s to the 70s that delved into the city's past. The walk was part of the Festival of Archaeology and was organised by Winchester Excavations Committee with the Hampshire Cultural Trust. It was so popular that this was the second walk within a month. The tour included a visit to the Great Hall to see Roger Brown's model of the city in 1870. And there is a photograph of people standing around this wonderful model in the Great Hall. I do urge you to go and see it if you haven't already.
This item is headed All Change for Our Pubs. The Campaign for Real Ale periodically laments the closure of pubs, claiming dozens across Britain are closing every week. The rate is such that the last pub will close in around 2025. Camera fails to mention that many of these pubs only close temporarily and later reopen. But Bulgarum has been looking at the situation in one small part of Winchester, the city east of the River Itchen. 10 years ago, there were 9 public houses. The Heart in Hand on Bar End Road, the Black Boy on Wharf Hill, the King's Arms on Chesil Street, the Rising Sun on Magdalen Hill, the Cricketers on Bridge Street, the Willow Tree on Derngate, the Ship and First In Last Out on Wales Street, and the Golden Lion on Alsford Road. That number has now dropped to 6, a decline of a third. The Heart and Hand has been demolished to be replaced by homes and offices. The King's Arms is now the Michelin-starred Black Rat restaurant, and the Ship is a children's nursery. The Cricketers is now No. 5 Bridge Street bar/restaurant. The Willow Tree and the Rising Sun were closed for periods. Happily, both reopen.
Estate agents' signs of the times. It is undoubtedly a clever marketing ploy being used by Winchester estate agents. Started by Charters a couple of years ago, they are sponsoring community events such as fetes and cricket tournaments and then placing their boards around the district. The Stratton Parker one at the Percy Hobbs roundabout at Maughan Hill is for the forthcoming Eastern Fete, while Charters promotes the Cheriton Cricket Sixes Festival. Both are this bank holiday Monday. Whether City Council planners are happy with the trend is unclear.
We're moving on now to historical items, sometimes affectionately called hysterical items. And we've got 25 years from Claire, and we'll end up with 200 years from me. Would you like to take off, please, Claire?
Certainly. 25 years ago, August the 24th, 1990. This is rather relevant to Robin's article. Boozers bottom out. With 126 pubs to choose from, the Edwardian drinker of Winchester had nearly 3 times as many watering holes to sample as the tippler of the present day. There are some 44 pubs left now in Winchester, and little evidence exists of the taverns and inns that once crowded the city. The Riverside Inn, High Street, and the Bird in Hand, Union Street, are recent casualties. But there are only 2 reminders left in the city of the older hostelries. One is the painted sign of the White Horse Inn, which closed in the 1930s. It can be seen above the K and Clark shop in the High Street. Excuse me, the second paragraph. Oil worker flees war. Mr. John Osgoby, a 42-year-old oil engineer of Embley Lane, Wellow, retold in his home this week how he escaped from Kuwait. His wife Anna and sons Paul and Craig left for holiday in England just before the invasion, and Mr. Osgoby was due to join them when the Iraqi invasion put paid to his holiday plans. The decision to flee was made by Mr. Osgoby last weekend when Iraq announced its plans for foreign nationals to report to certain centres. Mr. Osgoby said, "As soon as we heard about that, I knew I had to get out."
50 years ago, August the 28th, 1965, dog attacks doctor. 2-year-old Alsatian bitch Juna sat quietly in Alton Magistrates' Court on Tuesday while the story of her encounter with the woman doctor was related. And while the magistrates retired to consider whether she was a dangerous animal or not, she made friends with practically everyone in the courtroom. The dog had been on guard in the public bar of the Baker's Arms one afternoon during closing hours when Dr. Alice Lloyd of Crondall entered, the court heard. She was on a professional visit. "As I walked in, the dog came from the back of the bar and started attacking me," she said. Mr. Nash said his dog had been guarding the bar at the request of the landlord. And the second item is pony export rumours. Sir Barclay Piggott, chairman of the New Forest Pony Breeding and Cattle Society, recently stated that the society would welcome evidence of any kind relating to allegations that some forest ponies have been exported for slaughter. "Not a shred of evidence has been provided," he stated after a meeting of his society council on Friday last week. Mrs. Josephine Westron, founder and secretary of the New Forest Society for the Prevention of Straying Animals, has claimed to have proof that there has been such traffic and recently stated that an investigator who went to Holland last winter saw New Forest ponies being sold in Utrecht meat market.
100 years ago, August the 28th, 1915. Gallipoli's heroes. Little can be said about the ever-increasing number of military occupying the camps around Winchester, but they are still growing and will eventually form very important forces indeed. Further news of the gallantry of the 2nd Hampshires in the Gallipoli landings are to hand, and it will thrill the hearts of Hampshire people to read how, after 15 days' continuous fighting, all that was left of them, we're told by a responsible officer, that they had achieved the impossible. Winchester was among the very first places to offer hospitality to some of the thousands of refugees who flocked to this country from stricken Belgium in the early days of the war. And the second item, US tennis tournament. Owing to an eager desire to augment the fund, which is being raised to provide cigarettes for the men at the Dardanelles, in answer to an appeal by Lieutenant Edney Hayter, RFA, an American tennis tournament was held on Tuesday on the courts kindly lent by the vicar, Mr. Edney Hayter, and Mr. Hunt. The fund benefited by the addition of £2.05.
And 200 years ago, August the 28th, 1815, we have two items again. The first is headed Troops Arriving. British troops continue daily to arrive, and it is said that we shall reoccupy Calais as a right of property, as in the days of our Henrys. Blücher continues as active as ever in removing articles from Paris. The gallery of the plans of fortifications has been terribly stripped. It is in the attics of the left wing of the Hospital of Invalids and contained plans of all the fortification and fortified towns with surrounding grounds laid down in relief upon a large scale. All those of Prussia or Austria have been taken away. At least none but French ones are left. And their second item is entitled Algeria Raids Spain. Letters of the 19th of July state that the Algerines have gone through the farce of declaring war against Spain. Hostilities have commenced, and these lawless plunderers have actually landed and carried off defenceless inhabitants from the Spanish soil. It is disgraceful to every state in Europe to allow such repeated attacks on the part of these lawless freebooters, and we sincerely hope that our own government will not in any longer defer the annihilation of these nests of pirates. And that concludes our regular items from the Hampshire Chronicle this week. Thank you all for reading those, and we're going to take a look now at what's on in the region over the next couple of weeks. Well, the first item that I have here that you may be interested in is Tommy Steele is coming to the Mayflower in September to play in the Glenn Miller story, and that will feature a 16-piece orchestra and sensational performers and dazzling choreography, it says here. So if you're interested in that, it is on at the Mayflower Theatre, and it is only for 1 week. It starts on the 8th of September, that's Tuesday, and finishes on the 12th of September. Now, the box office number is 02380 711 811. So that's Tommy Steele in the Glenn Miller story. Box office 02380 711 811. And Robin now has an item for you. I can't remember what that one is, Robin.
It's about Jasper Carrot.
Oh, good.
And it's headed Funky Moped Comedian Revs Up for His Latest Tour. Jasper Carrot at Southampton O2 Guildhall. One of Britain's most famous comedians is set to come to Hampshire in September. Jasper Carrot, who is known for his stand-up routines, TV work and comedy songs, will be at Southampton's O2 Guildhall on September the 6th for his stand-up and rock show. The 70-year-old from Solihull shot to fame in 1975 with his comedy single Funky Moped. Since then, he has been drawing in the crowds with his stand-up shows. Carrot will be joined in Southampton by the Bev Bevan Band and guests, who will provide those in attendance with a night of rocky tunes. Jasper Carrot will be at the O2 Guildhall in Southampton at 7:30 on September the 6th. To buy tickets for the show, visit the Guildhall website, www.o2guildhallsouthampton.co.uk, or call 02380 632 601. That's 02380 632 601.
And Jerry with something on Agincourt.
Yes, you. Agincourt is remembered. A glorious English victory is among the highlights at a Hampshire theatre this autumn. Two new plays are being staged at Hedgeend's The Bury Theatre as part of its Road to Agincourt project. The first, The Road to Glory, tells the story of a group of young villagers, some of them barely out of childhood, who enlist in King Henry V's army and set sail from Southampton to claim the throne of France for England. Each has a different reason for going, and their expectations vary, but none has any experience of fighting in a war. Neil Duffield's play, shown on Friday and Saturday, October the 30th and 31st, combines both fact and fantasy in a fast-paced production, taking the audience from rural England to the bloodshed of the Battle of Agincourt. And on the Saturday, Neil, the writer, will take part in a question and answer session hosted by the play's director. Hampshire's Year 9 students will rework Shakespeare's chronicle of the battle in Shakespeareance, Henry V, the second play in The Road to Agincourt, on Friday, November the 20th. Another great British writer is brought to the stage on Friday, October the 16th, with Adam Long's Dickens Abridged, a high-speed comic journey through Charles Dickens' greatest hits. Two nights of comedy are also part of the autumn season. Stand-up comic Sean Hughes brings his new show, Mumbo Jumbo, to the Bury Theatre on Saturday, November the 7th. And just 2 weeks later, on Saturday, November the 21st, Robert Newman brings his Robert Newman, The Brain Show, to the venue. Two of Shakespeare's greatest and most violent plays will be screened from the National Theatre as part of the season. On September the 24th, National Theatre Live, Coriolanus will be on show with an award-winning performance from Tom Hiddleston in the title role and directed by the Donmar Warehouse's artistic director, Josie Rourke. Benedict Cumberbatch will be taking on the Bard when he plays the titular role in Hamlet on Thursday, October the 15th. For younger members of the family, Emma Reeves' Snow Child is on Saturday, November the 7th. With atmospheric music, beautiful movement and an inspired design, Snow Child promises to be a wonderland of inventive storytelling to enchant children and families. For Christmas, the Bury Theatre presents Little Red Riding Hood on Christmas Eve. Acclaimed playwright Mike Kenny's script promises to be a tale packed with special pies, smelly fur coats and donuts, and runs from Friday, December the 11th. For more information about all these shows, contact the box office of the Bury Theatre on 02380 652 333, or visit www.theberrytheatre, all one word, theberrytheatre.co.uk.
Thank you, Jerry. And I've got news of another Shakespearean performance. It's headed Othello Live Performance. One of Shakespeare's greatest tragedy will be screened at a Hampshire venue. The Royal Shakespeare's Company Live from Stratford-upon-Avon performance of Othello will be screened at The Point in Eastleigh on Thursday, 17th of September. Othello is the greatest general of his age, a fearsome warrior, loving husband, and a revered defender of Venice against its enemies. But he is also an outsider, a black man whose victories have created enemies of his own, men such as his seemingly loyal Lieutenant Iago, driven by prejudice and jealousy to destroy him. As they plot in the shadows, Othello realises too late that the greatest danger lies not in the hatred of others, but in his own fragile and destructive pride. The drama reaches a murderous climax. Playing the role of Othello will be well-known actor Hugh Cauchy, who has acted in TV shows like Doctor Who and Holby City, and also played Captain Panaker in Star Wars and The Phantom Menace. The show is due to start at 7 p.m. at The Point in Lee Road, Eastleigh. Tickets are £12 and £10 for concessions and can be booked by calling the box office on 02380 652 333. That's 02380 652 333, or by visiting www.thepointeastleigh.co.uk. That's all lowercase and no spaces. www.thepointeastleigh.co.uk. Claire has another thing to talk to us about.
Yes, this is about Spanish choral masters celebrated by concert. A concert of classical music from the Spanish Golden Age will be performed in Winchester Cathedral on Friday, September the 4th. The 16 choral group will perform music by two masters of the Spanish Renaissance, Francisco Guerrero and Alonso Lobo. The composers lived in Seville in the 16th century, when Spain was a world superpower, wealthy on the riches of the New World. The concert in Winchester is part of the 16's choral pilgrimage entitled Flight of Angels to Cathedrals Across England. The Winchester concert starts at 7:30 p.m. with a pre-concert talk from 7 p.m. The 16's director, Harry Christophers, said, "Both were prolific, and on our choral pilgrimage, we will give audiences an overview of their music, which is undoubtedly imbued with the religious fever of Philip II's Spain. There can be few composers who can boast a pilgrimage to the Holy Land. Guerrero made his in 1588 and published a book about his incredible journey, even his abduction by pirates. That was one of his very few forays out of Spain. He was reputed to have been a person of gentleness and charm and in possession of a beautiful high tenor voice, and it is that singing quality that comes across in his works. Every line is a joy to sing." Robert Stevenson wrote that the moods he captured included ecstasy, gaiety, melancholy, longing, submission and repose, many of which are captured in Agnus Dei 1 and 2 from his Missa Congratulamini Mihi. One could also add grandeur and solemnity as in the hymn Vexilla Regis. Lobo was a choir boy at Seville Cathedral, where Guerrero was maestro de capilla, and as a young man he was a studious pupil who then became a worthy disciple. To say he was obsessed with musical form would detract from the beauty of his works. And this concert is in Winchester Cathedral on Friday, September the 4th, and the concert starts at 7:30 p.m. with a pre-concert talk from 7 p.m.
Thank you very much, Claire. And that concludes our What's On for this week. And I think that was a very varied set of events, if I hope something interests you in there. And now, before we move on to the general news, as usual, I'm going to give you the lighting up times. And they start on Saturday, the 29th of August, when the sun will set at 7:58 p.m. And on Wednesday, September the 2nd, the sun will rise at 6:19 a.m. with the sun setting at 7:49 p.m. Oh dear, those evenings are drawing in, aren't they? And so on to items of the general news, and Claire will start us off, please.
Armed response. Armed police officers were deployed in Winchester, leading to the arrest of a man. Specialist armed officers were sent to Colson Road, Winnall, at roughly 1:45 a.m. on Sunday, August the 16th, following reports of a disturbance in which a weapon was seen. No one was injured, and a 43-year-old man from Winchester was arrested. A local person, who asked not to be named, said there was an armed raid with a lot of police officers. It woke everyone up. A police spokesman said the public could be reassured that it was an isolated incident and the incident presents no further risk to local residents. Police divers searched the bed of the nearby River Itchen that Sunday afternoon. A police spokesman declined to confirm reports from local people that a weapon was seen to be recovered. Darren Belcourt, 43, of Colson Road, has been charged with the possession of an air weapon with intent to cause fear of violence. He has been released on bail to appear at Basingstoke Magistrates Court on September the 15th.
A booming good show. Boomtown Fair has recorded a second year of low noise complaints following earlier protests from residents. The festival received 33 objections this year, organisers said on Tuesday, fewer than half its total in previous years. The four-day event at Matterley Estate near Winchester sparked 70 complaints in 2012 and a council investigation in the following year amid claims of excessive noise and music breaking a 4 a.m. curfew. 11 people complained during this year's event from August the 13th to the 16th, compared to 8 in 2014. The figures were only slightly up this year, despite a record crowd of 46,000. Changes made this year included an on-site noise hotline and moving larger stages to help minimise escaping sound. Winchester City Council continues to monitor sound levels, with members of its licensing committee giving a site tour during the event. The festival is currently being dismantled. Some security watchtowers, newly installed for 2015, remained on the estate this week. A Boomtown spokesman said, "We worked hard to ensure that all members of the local community had access to the contact information and the direct hotline number well in advance to make it as easy as possible for people to get in touch. We also had a team working to act upon issues raised if we were in a position to rectify the disturbance. We would like to take this opportunity to thank the local community for their support and feedback. We will continue to listen and work alongside the local residents to further make this an event the region is proud of." The City Council ran a hotline for residents dissatisfied with the festival's response to complaints. The Guildhall had not responded to a request for figures when the Chronicle went to press yesterday. Some £65,000 worth of drugs were confiscated by police at Boomtown 2015, with 337 crimes reported.
Driver dies in crash with fire appliance. An investigation is underway into a fatal crash involving a car and a Winchester fire engine, excuse me, which was returning from an emergency call. The crew were on their way back from dealing with a gas leak at a petrol station at Lymington when their vehicle collided with a Ford Puma in the New Forest. The car driver, a man in his 20s, died at the scene, and one of the firefighters was taken to hospital with minor injuries. Hampshire Police and Hampshire Fire Service have launched a joint investigation. The collision happened on the Lyndhurst to Brockenhurst section of the A337, the scene of a fatal accident involving an ambulance in 2013. The latest incident occurred on Saturday night, just a few hundred yards south of the spot where, in 2013, the ambulance crashed into a tree, killing the driver and an 88-year-old patient. Firefighters have been called to a gas leak at a petrol station on the Ampress Business Park in Wellworthy Road, Lymington. The area was evacuated while the leak was sealed and no one was hurt. A Winchester appliance was sent because it was fitted with a specialist equipment for dealing with hazardous materials. The vehicle was returning to Winchester Fire Station on Eastern Lane, Winnall, when the crash happened just before 11 p.m. A fire service spokesman said, "The driver of the car sadly died at the scene, and our thoughts are with his family and friends during this traumatic time." One of the firefighters was taken to hospital with minor injuries and has subsequently been discharged. "We are committed to the welfare of our firefighters and are supporting those who were involved in this tragic incident. They were returning to their home station after dealing with the Lymington incident and did not have their blue lights on. Additional vehicles and standby moves were arranged to ensure that the provision of emergency cover was maintained for Hampshire. A police spokesman added, "The Hampshire Constabulary and Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service are working together to establish the circumstances." The accident happened between the entrances to Holland's Wood campsite and New Park, home of the New Forest Show. The road remained closed until 10:30 a.m. on Sunday to allow for forensic investigation. The Hampshire Chronicle understands that the fireman injured in the crash was not the driver of the vehicle. He has not been named.
Businesses chide closure. Businesses in Alresford have criticised plans by Barclays Bank to close its branch in the town. Barclays wrote to customers of the branch in East Street saying it would be closing its doors on November the 6th. The closure has shocked local business owners who are concerned that the town will only have Lloyds Bank left, as NatWest, also on East Street, closed this year. Simon Evans, owner of the Naked Grape Wine Merchants and chairman of the Alresford Chamber of Trade, said if Barclays does close, that will leave us with one bank, which is not sufficient for a town of more than 5,000 people. Banking facilities are fundamental. There needs to be a service provided. It makes it a slightly less viable place to do business, and it does mean that businesses that might want to relocate here see it as a reason not to come here. It makes it harder to do business, and business should be made easier, not harder. Residents and businesses have launched a petition to persuade bosses at Barclays to change their mind. Dave Basnett, owner of Dave's Fish and Chips and Alresford Haircare, both on West Street, said, "I think it is disgusting what Barclays are doing. NatWest closed at the start of the year and a lot of customers moved from there to Barclays and were told clearly that Barclays would not be closing. To go back on that has left a sour taste." Jackie Porter, county councillor, is calling for a rethink and says that people feel let down as they were told the branch would stay open when they moved from NatWest. She added that the closure will affect the amount of cash available in the town. Councillor Porter said, "The town of Alresford will not have as much cash flowing around it, and I think that is very serious. It sends out a message saying that the town is not open for business." Barclays spokesman Donna Hagen said the closure was largely due to falling numbers of customers, and also cited online and mobile banking as a reason to close the branch. She did not say how many jobs could be lost, but added that staff at the branch have been consulted and will be given the chance to work at a Barclays branch nearby. Ms. Hagen said, "At Barclays Alresford branch, customer usage has declined since 2008 by 47%, and 45% of customers now regularly use alternative branches, which is why we have taken the difficult decision to close the branch on Friday, November the 6th. All of our customers will receive a letter. Posters will be displayed in branch and colleagues will be on hand to assist customers with any concerns they may have. We will be proactively engaging with local businesses and the wider community to discuss the alternative ways customers will be able to undertake their banking locally before the branch closes."
Final route for buses. For decades, its buses and coaches were a familiar sight on the roads of Hampshire, taking thousands of county residents from A to B. But after Curdridge-based Bryjan Tours went bust, people will have a chance to say farewell to the well-known business as a coach will hit the Hampshire roads one last time. One of the firm's buses will go on a last journey on September the 5th, and it is hoped that many of the passengers over the last 25 years will line the streets to cheer it on its way. An administrator is expected to be appointed at the firm, and 9 workers have transferred to Zeelabus, which is taking on the firm's routes. It is not known how many more members of staff may lose their jobs. The Chronicle has not been able to speak to Brian Botley, who set the firm up with his wife Janet in 1990, despite repeated attempts to contact him. Just weeks after striking a deal with Zeelabus to take on some of its routes, the firm has gone out of business. Before Brijan buses are consigned to history, one of its buses will complete routes 7 and 8 one last time. Passengers who have travelled on the firm's cream-coloured vehicles are urged to say their oh goodbyes to the service as it makes its way between Eastleigh and Southampton via Bishop's Waltham on September the 5th.
Warning over counterfeit coins. A Winchester woman is warning people to be on the lookout for counterfeit £2 coins. Denise Baker, mayoress to Chris Pines in 2007-08, was caught out with a dud last week. Miss Baker, of Lower Stanmore Lane, St Cross, said she met someone who had also got a rogue coin. It's annoying to think these counterfeiters are getting away with it. The more people know about it, the better. The coins are getting into the system somewhere, but not through machines, she said. The coins look and feel different to genuine coins. They are clearly fake when closely inspected, but can be easily missed. The fake coin was slightly heavier, dull rather than shiny, and had a plastic feel rather than a metallic one. The detailing of the Queen's head and the writing was also inferior. On a real coin, between the silver and the nickel brass parts, there is a ring of raised points missing on the counterfeit coin. The Royal Mint regularly conducts surveys to estimate the level of counterfeit £1 coins in the UK. A survey undertaken in May 2014 found that the rate of counterfeit UK £1 coins in circulation at the time was around 3%, meaning there are millions in circulation. It was unclear what the ratio is for £2 coins. The larger coins were thought to be less prone to counterfeiting, as it's harder to piece the inner and outer parts together. National newspaper reports last year said Chinese criminals have masterminded manufacturing almost perfect bimetallic coins. Anyone with a counterfeit, or who suspects that a coin may be a fake, should hand it in at the police station.
Charities boosted by cash injection. More than 20 charities across the Winchester district have been given a much-needed cash boost. Some £16,000 was shared out to 21 local charities and community groups last month as part of Hampshire County Council's Have Your Say scheme. Members of the public were asked to cast their votes for their favourite projects, organised by Community First Winchester, formerly Winchester Area Community Action. More than 2,000 votes were submitted, which covered such projects as Food Upfront, Elderfield, a not-for-profit food enterprise. Founder Seb Mayfield said, "It's absolutely brilliant to receive this money. Not only does it mean we will be able to involve more local people in growing food at our site, but it also gives us a great deal of confidence knowing that people in Winchester have voted for us and believe in what we are doing." Other charities to benefit included Winchester Dementia Friendly Communities and the newly formed charity Winchester Radio, who applied for support for their bid to Ofcom for an FM community radio licence.
Teens help pull off big musical event. Hundreds of people enjoyed a Winchester music event, part organised by local teenagers. A team of 10 youngsters helped plan, promote and stage Stanmore Live, held at the Carroll Centre on Saturday. The event largely dodged the showers and saw around 800 people over the day enjoying the acts. Stanmore Live replaced Party in the Park, which was previously organised by A2 Dominion Housing Association, but was not going to be held this year. One of the organisers was Eddie Maggs, 16, who also performed and was compere for the afternoon. Eddie, of Abbey Hill Road, said, "It was the first time I have done anything like it. It went quite well. I was nervous the day before, but on the day, the adrenaline kicked in." He said, "We are really pleased with how it has gone. We had a limited budget, but we started work in January, and since then we have been having meetings every week." Event manager Neil Valentine of Wavell Way Stanmore said, "It went great. It was high-quality stuff. There were great performances all round. Lots of teenagers hung around all day and had a good time. The team of young producers had a brilliant day. They were buzzing at the end. We hope it will happen again next year." Mr. Valentine thanked the Carol Centre and Winnell Rock School, which provided the equipment.
Planners snub chaotic farm. A landowner accused of bringing chaos to South Wanston after dozens of animals escaped into gardens has lost his battle with city planners. Robert Memory angered neighbours by bringing livestock onto his small holding in Alsford Drove. Attempts to build barns, sheds and enclosures have been blocked by Winchester City Council after more than 20 neighbours spoke out about noise, dung smell and dangerous traffic on the one-track road. Pigs, goats, geese and chickens have been seen in gardens, distressing elderly residents. Six rear, flightless birds that are similar to ostriches also escaped from their enclosure in July. Police are still tracking three, which remain on the loose. Mr. Memory planned to open a small farm shop 7 days a week. He wanted to keep rare breeds on site for maximum income, according to his application. Much of the work has already been done. The council received 21 objections to his part retrospective bid for permission. Ward councillor Malcolm Wright, who lives in Goldfinch Way, said, "This is not an attempt by someone to live the good life, which may be acceptable in some villages or towns, which this proposed development borders on, but an attempt to form a profitable small holding, which should only be allowed to open in rural areas." Neighbour Emily Hutt said, "The constant noise of these animals does have an effect on the local houses, and even driving past the area, you never know what might pop out of the fence. It just looks like a chaotic area, with animals escaping all the time. Planning officers will now consider enforcement action." Mr. Memory was unavailable for comment. "And I drove down Alsford Drove the other afternoon, and I'm really cross because I didn't see any of these wonderful animals."
Thank you, Jerry. Off.
Nine homes plan refused at council. Plans for nine new homes in Winchester have been turned down despite receiving several letters of support. Planners refused a development from Drew Smith Homes, which included seven three-bed and two four-bed homes at Chilbolton Avenue, even though residents said the designs complemented the area. Despite the building's modern design, labelled by one supporter as exciting, and the need for housing in the area, city councillors rejected the application by 7-2. Officers said the layout, scale, height and mass did not fall in line with the Chilbolton Avenue local area design statement, and the development would be detrimental on amenities as there was no provision for affordable housing. There were three objections, citing proximity to trees, density and height, and the increase of traffic on an already very busy road. Jeremy Tyrrell, the agent, said the development would have a lasting effect on the city, which we could all be proud of. It responds to the topography of the site. When compared to neighbouring Connaught Square, it is within scale.
Call to devolve law. Meon Valley MP George Hollingbury has called for Sunday trading laws to be devolved to councils. The government is consulting on how it might allow local authorities to relax the rules, letting shops and larger businesses stay open longer. Mr. Hollingbury said, "Of course, there will be many views, but it seems to me that the time is now ripe to make a change, and more importantly, to ensure that local government has a powerful say in how opening hours operate. It's clear that high streets need to adapt to thrive in an internet age, but local councillors or mayors will be best placed to see when increased opening hours will be either good or not be good for communities. Retail has changed dramatically in the Meon Valley since trading laws were last changed in 1994. Several shops have shut as locals migrate online and to large superstores. The government consultation asked residents at what level they would like to see trading laws set. It can be viewed at gov.uk/government/consultations/devolving Sunday trading rules. Responses are due by September the 16th. There will be no changes to regulations on Easter Sunday or Christmas, according to the Department for Business, Innovation and Skills.
Wild bees to feature on new Royal Mail stamps. A rare species of bee, whose remaining strongholds include parts of Hampshire, is featured on a new set of British stamps. The Potter flower bee, which has declined severely since 1990 and has only been recorded at a handful of sites in North Hampshire, the Isle of Wight, Dorset, East Sussex and North Essex, features on the new £2.25 stamp. Other bees featured in the set of 10 stamps include the solitary scabious bee, found on Salisbury Plain, which is on the second-class stamp. Research commissioned by the Royal Mail found that although people care about bees, there's little knowledge about them, and 53% could not name a single type of bee. The stamps are on sale at royalmail.com/bees from 8,000 post office branches across the UK and by calling Royal Mail on 0357 641 641.
I think we'll all remember the solitary scabious bee when we post our second class letters, and then we will know one species. Well, thank you very much, everyone, for all of those items. It concludes the Hampshire Chronicle extracts for this week. And do please remember that Irene Dowding is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. Her number again is 01962 870 370. 01962 870 370. And thanks again to our editors, Gordon and Liz, and the copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And we must also thank our readers, Claire.
Bye.
Robin.
Bye.
Jerry.
Bye.
Thank you all. And from me, Roz. Goodbye. Please put the memory stick in the wallet when you've finished with it and return it to us as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you very much for listening, and let's hope you enjoy what's left of our summer. Until next time, goodbye and thank you.